Okay, good morning, everyone. We're going to get started. My name is Dan Plastina, and I'm here to present information protection. It's sort of a new name for what has been known as rights management services. We've got a lot to show. We've been quietly working very, very hard at improving RMS in a way that it has not seen in its 10 years of existence. So what I'm going to do today is walk you through a little bit of background on information protection. I'm going to go quickly through this background material, given some feedback from the New Orleans talk. But if anyone wants me to slow down, just raise your hand, shout. Please interact with me as we go through things. And then I'll jump through some demonstrations on what we've done. We've got RMS working on a whole lot of platforms with many more apps able to protect all sorts of file types. And so I'll jump in on that. But again, please don't hesitate to ask any questions. I'm here for you today. In terms of industry trends, none of these should be surprising to any of you here. Consumerization of IT is a big one that has just been happening for the last 3 years, but really right now it's in full swing. Externalization of IT in a similar way. A lot more folks are working with other departments, outsourced, hosted infrastructure. Obviously Office 365 and Azure are gaining a lot of traction, are very big and top of mind. Data is in more places, and there's a whole lot more of it. And the need to protect the data itself is becoming increasingly apparent to more people. And finally, just the notion of the social enterprise or the multi-connected organization. In the oil industry, for example, it's not uncommon that 175 different companies get together to collaborate or work on a new project. And so those companies need to share information. And the result of all this is that the perimeter that was once very real, was a moat around your company to keep the data inside, it just no longer exists. And so protecting at the data level as opposed to at the network perimeter is just something that we must deal with as modern companies. In terms of the market realities, IRM, ERM, enterprise rights management, the business has been a tough business for a variety of reasons. Microsoft has been a leader in this market, but it still had issues with the offer that it had in play. And I could describe those as we go along. IT knows that users collaborate, but they tend to look the other way today. I would say that at Microsoft, we use RMS quite a bit, and we have 7 sharing relationships, 7. On a given day, I wouldn't be surprised if we collaborate with 700 or 7,000 different companies. And so we're clearly not set up to do secure collaboration between two organizations in an effective manner. And we have to fix this. This is top of mind for a lot of the executives that I interact with. And then finally, the consumerization in IT and the BYOD, bring your own device trends, are bringing in a lot of increased risk because now you have data residing on portable devices, on laptops that are not as tightly managed as they once were within your organization. Cloud drives are also a very important new technology that are effectively replacing USB sticks. How many of you put glue in the USB slots of your PCs a couple of years ago? No one here? So in the United States, it's really common, maybe 10 years ago, that people would just put epoxy in the USB slots to prevent people from putting in thumb drives. Now, with cloud drives, folks are just going to web pages and putting stuff on SkyDrive, Dropbox, Box.net, you name it. Not to be malicious or not to be intentionally trying to leak data, but rather just to bring some files home so they can do some work at home later on in the evening. I have a few laws, if you wish, of information protection. The first one is data exists to be consumed. The reason why people create Word documents is not just for themselves. It's to share with others. It's to make something known to other people. And so that data needs to flow around. And if you, as leaders of IT within your company, lock down that data, in some ways you reduce the value of that information. You want it to flow. So we have to figure out together how we make it flow very well. Protection, to me, is the word that defines encryption, basically a form of security on the document, but with policy. So if I'd like to share a document with, say, Christian in the audience here, I would encrypt the document to enforce protection on it so that it's secure, but I also want to apply policy so that I know Christian doesn't forward it to other people or doesn't print it. And so to me, as I go through the deck here, I will be talking about protection in that manner. Protected data needs to be consumed by more than human beings. And so this one's important because technologies like PGP and S/MIME are optimized at point-to-point communication. But in the world that we live in, you must enable protection so that it can be inspected through various software processes as it flows through the system. So for example, Exchange should be able to look at it and see if data is leaking the enterprise, if there's PII data that might have legal effects on your company. Are you leaking customer information, healthcare information? And so a modern technology capable of enforcing protection should also let Exchange, your DLP gateway, your various other infrastructure in your company reason over that data. And finally, protection, in my mind, is important in two different levels or tiers. One level is if I share a document with three people in this audience, but you know the other 100 people want to look at it, they should not be able to look at it without having a password access to that document. They were not authorized. The second part is for the three people who could look at the document, when they open it, it should feel like it's not protected. It should be very easy to use, and it shouldn't feel like there's a lot of security friction in the way. So before you provide password, very, very secure. After you provide password, very transparent, very easy to use and out of the way. In terms of how we protect information, there are a lot of different technologies. Real quick, transparent drive encryption, things like BitLocker, are ways of protecting a drive in its entirety. If I lose my laptop, I feel safe that nothing is leaking. But everything on the laptop has the same access to that information. So if I were to put SkyDrive or Dropbox on my laptop, I could be synchronizing all of those files to the cloud storage with no form of protection. So it serves one purpose, but it's not great at protecting data itself. Data centralization is a common trend. I think it's fantastic, but it's not always possible. And this means something like SharePoint, where I put all my data in a SharePoint repository, and I ask that the employees keep everything there. The reality is people take things out of SharePoint, and they put them on their thumb drive. They bring them home to do some work on their home machine. They put them on iPads, on Androids, on Windows RT Surface tablets. That information is now decentralized and roaming around. And then finally, there's sort of a new breed of implementations for data protection called content encryption gateways. And these are technologies that basically encrypt everything that leaves your organization to the cloud. And there are a lot of companies doing this. They have some limitations. And so they do some things pretty well, many things they do very poorly in terms of protecting functionality. Namely, they encrypt everything, so you get the ability to hit the checkbox and say, I have encryption. But once that data flows to the cloud, it's encrypted in a way that anti-malware, anti-spam, sorting, all kinds of other core features of your platform just stop working because it's no longer data that could be used or processed by your servers. So I could talk more about these afterwards if anyone would like some deep dives. Just let me know. In terms of the new RMS, so I won't go too much into what the old one did, but once I go through these, you'll be able to guess where the gaps were. I'm promising that we ought to protect any file type. There was a time where Microsoft's RMS offer was focused on Office. Customers said, well, what about PDF? That's, you know, another 20%. Office might have been 50%, half of your files, but PDF is, say, the next 20. What about text files? What about JPEGs, et cetera? So those formulate another large percentage of the files that need to be protected. And then finally, you have, you know, CAD files or any other type of file that you have in your organization, and you want to protect those as well. Those protected files should work on any important device. There was a time where any important device was a Windows PC or a Windows server. Those times have changed a bit, and we'll show you what we've done for Reach in order to make this work on a broader set of platforms. You should be able to share with anyone, and the people you share with should be able to sign up for free. I should be able to send a document to all of you. If I had your email addresses, the promise here is that I can send a rights-protected document to all of you, and if your company does not have RMS, we will give it to you such that you can read the document. And one better, when you're done, you can send your own protected documents to people in this room, all automatically and all very simply, and I'll show you how we do that. Keeping your data on-premise is something that many of you want. On-premise basically means that you're not a cloud company yet, and I'll walk through the different types of companies and how we can approach the problem. But I promise you that you could share any file type on any important device with anyone else in other companies and still keep your data within your company walls. So it doesn't have to all go to the cloud, for example. I can control RMS's tenant key. So RMS has a very important key that protects all the content. The way that Exchange, for example, is able to read mail or documents that are protected as it goes through the Exchange transport pipeline is by virtue of this tenant key. So you have to protect that key, and you want to be able to control it from your company. And I'll walk through that as well. Finally, you know what's going on with your protected data. As people read it, use it, as it flows around, as people try to read it and can't, you get to know about them as well. That's very important. We'll promise that. And then finally, something that I feel very strongly about is that many of you are in different businesses. Microsoft tends to focus on a breadth of businesses. Using an example, Carrefour is a very large store here in Spain. Walk in the store, you buy something you see, but you can't go to Carrefour and say, hey, you know, I'd like this table, but could you make the legs a little shorter and change the color for me? No, you buy what you see. In some ways, Microsoft is like that, where we build products for a lot of people, and so you buy that product, but we work with a lot of specialty companies to do very specialized applications for the business that you're in. And personally, I'm working with many, many partners to create those very specialized solutions. So that's another important promise of ours. Before I continue, are there any questions on this? Anything you'd like clarification on? Otherwise, I'll just jump in and we'll go through them one by one. Okay, great. So the first thing on all important devices. Whoop, was there a question? No? Yeah? Okay. So the question was, RMS, can I use it in the cloud with Office 365 and still have my tenant key on-premise? I'll walk through that in great detail. But yes, there's an RMS for the cloud and for on-premise and actually for hybrid too. Thank you. Good question. On all important devices, sorry? Okay. Yeah, I'll touch on that in a quick sec. So these are, in our minds, all important devices. I will touch on the so thank you. So Windows Store, for basically Windows Classic, iOS, Android, Windows RT, Windows Phone, Mac, and REST services. REST services enable web pages to decrypt, encrypt documents. So for example, Martin Kupiger Cole, large analyst here in Europe. Martin may have a website where he writes his thoughts down and wants to share them with each of you for a small fee. He charges money for say, his documentation. Martin could, by writing RESTful scripts in his web pages, generate PDFs that are individually signed to each one of you so that you don't share them to too many other people. given that's sort of the business. Gartner, Forrester, Frost & Sullivan, KPMG, Ernst & Young, all these different companies share information that's worth money, and so they could use the REST interfaces. We're also talking with, say, photocopier vendors. So you can go to a photocopier machine and put a page on it that contains, say, a patient's blood test results. And when they photocopy that, it could go into a PDF that's rights protected right from the glass. And so that photocopier could call the RESTful services as well. The two that are not in here that come up sometimes are BlackBerry and Linux. If important, we will do them. Thus far, most of the conversations we have about those two platforms are not in the same class as these offers. But if needed, we will go after them. If you feel the need for those platforms as part of your business and you're serious about RMS, come find me at the end or send email to us. We have an alias that you could use, askipteam@microsoft.com, and just send us your thoughts on these clients. These SDKs, I'll talk more about later, so I'll just jump ahead here. We have the ability to protect any file type. RMS works best with enlightened applications, applications that are intelligent, so to speak. So, for example, Office has RMS built into it. They use our software development kit, and they're able to do great things. I notice a couple folks taking pictures. The slides are 100% online. You'll be able to download the slides with me talking or without me talking if you prefer to have a private session. But the slides, the PPT file is a wholesale on the site. The enlightened applications are applications that are smart in the sense that they use the SDK, they can load up a protected document, and they enforce behavior. So I can create a PowerPoint such as this one, rights protect it, and say, send it to Fred, and Fred, you cannot forward it, and you cannot print it. So that's an example of an application that can enforce policy. We have, obviously, Office. We have PDF. I'll show you through a demo with Foxit that's done a great job at implementing a proposed ISO standard PDF format. And we've additionally built an application to view content on six platforms, and that application implements special protection over text and images. So here I show that text becomes ptext, XML becomes pxml. If you were to open up a ptext file in Notepad, it's just a bunch of binary encrypted data with a little bit of text that says, this is a protected file, go get the viewer. But in time, we would expect other applications to be able to open up ptext. And I'll show you what it looks like in a moment. Other protection, if not for the fully enlightened applications, or text and JPEG and PNG and XML, the other applications, for now, we just wrap them with a protective envelope. So the way to think about this would be like WinZip with encryption. So I can take an AutoCAD file, and it becomes autocad.dwg.pfile, and pfile is the protected file format. And that pfile I can put on the internet on BitTorrent if I want, and all of you can go try to look at it, and you won't be able to see it except for the people in the room, say Raphael, who wants to go open that document. He would be able to take it off BitTorrent, open it up, he will be prompted for credentials, and then we will launch AutoCAD and let AutoCAD open the file. That file type has no enforcement. So at that point, Raphael is sort of a co-author of the file in that he could choose to forward it to others in an unprotected state. But the education is very powerful in the sense that he had to authorize to open the document, and the user knows that it's an important file. And then, as I mentioned, we will do viewers on all platforms, and I'll just show you one right now. So protecting any file, I could have done a live demo of this. It's easier to just show it on screen and explain what we have here. At the top, I have a series of file types: Excel, image, PDF, PowerPoint, text, Visio, and Word doc. And at the bottom, I have the protected version of all of them. And the way I got that is I just went into Explorer and I said Protect. And at Microsoft, those are the policies that we use. And I just said read-only. So now at the bottom, all of the files are read-only. Two of them don't have icons. My laptop had a registry issue, so the icons got screwed up. But effectively, starting at the end, you'll see that the BAT file got protected as a P file, generic protection. The JPEG got a native protection. So when I show you this one open in a minute, it's enforced. You can't screen capture, you can't forward, you can't print. It's locked down to the read-only status. PDF, if you squint carefully, you'll see that the text, this is a sample PDF file, is now, this file is protected. And so PDF, we were able to put in a PDF in it that's encrypted, but also put a PDF that says the real thing you were trying to see is encrypted. So we were able to teach the user about this protected file format. PowerPoint is natively protected, so it doesn't change extensions. The same thing for Word. Text became PText, and Visio, in the version that I have on my machine, Visio 2010, or Visio 2013, it does not support RMS yet, so VSD became VSD.pfile. So these files are now all protected. I feel they're super safe. I can put them on SkyDrive. I can share them over the internet, email them to anyone. But only the people who are Microsoft employees will be able to read them. Any questions on that? Let me show you the next couple of screens, and then if there are any questions, I'll take them. So here's, we've worked with Foxit. They're a partner of ours. Foxit is a leading vendor of PDF technology along with Adobe. And they have built RMS into their applications. So what I'm going to show you here are three mobile devices. And again, I could have done the demo, but I'd be handling devices with a camera. So I've just taken screenshots. But this is real running code that we have ready to go. So what you see here are three devices. Obviously, the Windows Phone app is not running code, but it will soon be. The first two show that a PDF is protected, and that PDF is about to be opened. When I open the PDF, Foxit's mobile reader launches because it registered for handling PDFs. You're prompted to log in. Right now it says Windows Azure. It'll say Microsoft RMS in the next little bit. But then I log in as Alice in this case. Once I sign in, I can see the PDF, which was a budget of the US government. And it has the yellow bar at the top saying it is a protected file that's confidential. And if I click on the yellow bar, I'm able to see what permissions I have. In this case, Alice is the person who protected the document. So Alice has full control of the content. Let's take another example. In this case, what I'm going to do is show you a JPEG that was protected. So I take a JPEG, I protect it, or Alice did, and Alice sends this to Bob. So Bob gets this email, and on all three phones, you basically see what the mail clients look like, and there's a picture, 1903 flyer blueprints.pjpeg. That file is the same thing. It's protected, so the user must sign in to open it. Once they sign in, they can see the JPEG. In this case, we have the JPEG with a watermark on it. So if someone took a screen capture, iOS prohibits you from blocking screen capture, so you can always do a screen capture. But there's a watermark across the picture of the alias. And here again, if you click on the yellow bar, you could see the rights that were given. In this case, Bob's rights are viewing only. There's no full control, and there's no ability to copy or share with others. Yes, question. The question was, is the watermark mandatory or optional? At this point, we have it as mandatory, but we could, if it's an issue, we can consider removing it. We were only going to put the watermark on iPhone because iPhone prevents blocking screen capture. Android and Windows Phone let us write applications that say this app cannot be screen captured. Yeah. Can the settings be different on each of the platforms? Yes. Again, that would be something we would support. There was another question in the front. Yeah. The credentials are cached by the app. Our application, when launched by a file extension, becomes saved, and we have a keep alive OAuth cookie in the app. So it should be single sign-on the majority of the time. I don't have it in this deck, but we have a new screen to protect files, and I could show you later if you'd like. When I protect a file, I get to put a checkbox that says require that users always provide their credentials. Don't cache credentials ever. And that's fantastic because on phones, we had a gentleman from Forrester come by Microsoft. Forrester's a large analyst firm. And one of the things they said was a trend that's becoming increasingly popular is that they call them Faraday bags. They look like little lunch bags, but they're copper-lined mesh. And you can buy them on the internet. If you do a search on Bing or Google for Faraday bag, you'll see that you can get them in pink and camo and red and blue, whatever color you'd like. And these bags, the cab drivers carry them. And if you forget your phone in the cab, they'll put your phone in the little Faraday bag, and they can't be remote wiped. And then they sell the phone for a little bit more money because there's data on it. So if you protect data with RMS, and you actually say, do not cache keys, that data is dead at all times on the phone, and it requires an internet connection to go get the key at the time you open the file. So you end up with a very secure protection for your data. Okay, so any other questions on the clients or the generic protection? Yeah, question in the back. You're going to have to speak real loud. Okay, so the question was, does it work with Adobe Reader or must you use Foxit? Right now, you must use Foxit. We have had conversations with Adobe, given many customers use Adobe products for PDF, and it's up to Adobe to decide how, you know, whether they take action or not. User classification. So we work with Titus. Titus is a leader. There are others here. We've been talking to companies like Watchful Software from Portugal. There's Secure Island, which I'll talk about in a moment. And they also issued a press release recently about their work with RMS. Titus is a company that spends a lot of time working with other companies, organizations, to help them understand how to protect their data by using classification. And classification is often a simplification. Sometimes it's more complicated, but generally it's a simplification of the way you protect data. So what I showed earlier was I had a file or a collection of files that I wanted to protect, and what I chose to do is to protect read-only. So I said, use the template Microsoft read-only. I, as a human being, had to make a decision about the data that I was protecting and which policy I should use. Classification lets you change that, and it lets you say, have the user tell you what the data is, and then let IT or the CXO decide which policy should be applied to that data. You could do that either automatically or manually, and I'll talk about both of those in a moment. Data protection, Yeah, it's probably, I'm just going to jump ahead here and show you because it's a lot easier to explain with this picture. So earlier I showed protect and I showed you the security policies that Microsoft has. In this particular instance, what our application has done is our application has said, hey, for this company, is anyone around here, any service server in the company, a classification server? Could you educate me as to the type of protection you need? And in this case, the Titus server said, yeah, I'm here. I represent this company's classification. And so you see public, confidential, R&D only, secret. So you work with Titus, you work with Watchful Software, and you come up with a classification taxonomy, and we will show that classification taxonomy. The user here picked R&D. The policy that ended up on the file was Fabricam, R&D, read, write, print, copy, for example. So the user didn't have to be smart enough to know that that policy is what needed to be used. They just said, look, it's R&D confidential information. So that's a high value add provided by this service. The way this works is pretty straightforward. There's an RMS server and there's an RMS Enlightened application, our Information Protection Viewer app, the RMS app. It normally does the green line. It normally talks to the server and says, give me your policies. Now we're going to say, hey, is there a classification server in the building? If yes, we'll talk to it, and it can look at the RMS server for policies and then give us some XML information that we use to decide what to show to the user. So this is a proof of concept. We're just starting to think through this. If you have some feedback on it, please, you know, send us some requirements or designs. But we're going to work with the industry to create a manner by which all of the software like Word, Excel, PowerPoint, the IP viewer in the future, say Adobe, AutoCAD, Foxit, you name it, all of those applications will get this offer for free, and it would all be built in because of the SDK work that we're doing, the software development kit work. Yes, question? Okay, so the question was, does the classification server need to be part of the on-prem offering or could it be in the cloud? The answer is we will probably be tying it to the cloud, but it could be an on-prem server if you'd like. And in the case today, mostly they're on-prem, the folks who do this, but there's a really strong cloud play, and I will describe that as we talk about the architecture. There's also a gentleman in the room somewhere here named Tim Davis. He's in the back. Tim's got a talk tomorrow that will actually go through every step of what it means to deploy this. We will have a preview at the end of July where you will be able to do all of this within your company as a trial, and then we're looking to ship all of this in October. Much of it's already running, and much of it is already available to Office 365 users, but you'll see in the architectural diagrams in a few moments how you would apply this to your company. Okay, so another part of classification that's very important, okay, was automatic classification. So having a user tell you at the time they save a document, that's the way Watchful Software works. Having a user tell you at the time they hit right-click protect is a human interaction. But if you want to be very proactive, Exchange has a bunch of protection policies within the new Exchange 2013. If you've not seen that, I encourage you to take a look at it. But something that's really, and that's in market, it's available for purchase right now, and it's actually very, very cool. Office 365 and Exchange on-prem will do PCI DSS protection in the mail flow pipeline. And in Word 2013, in Outlook 2013, as you type your email, for example, at Microsoft, if you type an email and you say Microsoft Confidential, the yellow bar shows up automatically. If you type in more than 5 credit card numbers, the yellow bar shows up automatically. So it'll just protect very dynamically as you create content. And that's a very powerful auto-classification infrastructure. Today here, we've been introducing work folders. This is an amazing new technology. It was in the keynote. But basically, this lets you set up a laptop, a desktop, where you have the folders be on a server so that you have redundancy or replaceability of the desktop in case of loss, theft, or damage. But they run RMS on the files on your desktop and on your My Docs folder. So as you drop files into your Documents folder as part of doing normal work, the protection applies automatically. And then there's another product related to that called Dynamic Access Control, which lets you set up RMS protection and other behaviors on file servers. So any files that show up on the file server can automatically be inspected for importance of data, data confidentiality, and then have RMS applied automatically. There was a question in the front. Was it whether you could do it dynamically? Okay. So exactly, and DAC has been set up right now so that you could do with RMS on-premise, and there's a PowerShell script that works with the new RMS in Azure. You could try this yourself. The little application that I showed, right-click Protect, at this site, you can basically go download the app and start playing with it. We have software development kits. You can also get an Office E3 trial. In Tim's talk, he will walk through step by step how you could play with all this and get it going. It's actually super simple. RMS has never been simpler than we've made it in this update. And the Foxit reader is also available for download and purchase right now. It does RMS right away. Just as a recap on data protection, organizations of all sizes have sensitive data. You know, that's a given. Data is increasingly, rarely in a permanent state of rest. By this, I mean data is flowing around, and obviously the need to protect is important. But that data is in more and more places and processed by more and more automated services. So what I thought I'd do is I'd show you some of the other applications that you may not be aware of that do interesting forms of data protection. So they all are built on our SDK. There's three of them. One of them is a core API that's very powerful and capable of doing strong protection. There's a file API that's literally two lines of code. You basically just say, get templates, protect file, and that's it. So if you're an IT pro and you have data in your organizations that you'd like to protect, you could literally write a small PowerShell script that walks through your files and protect them all very, very easily. And then we talked about the RESTful service that lets others make use of RMS without having to implement or use our SDK. So if BlackBerry wanted to do some work, the way BlackBerry is generally architected is they don't use Exchange Active Sync. They use the Bez server. And that Bez server can make use of the REST APIs directly. So as data goes down to the mobile device, they could do that. And the same for Good Technology, which is another company that does secure phone implementations. OK, so let's talk a little bit about Secure Island. So Secure Island is a company in Israel. They're very interesting in that one aspect of what they do is they harden desktops. And it'll be obvious in a second what I mean by that. But they basically take RMS and aggressively apply it to data in a DLP sort of way. But they also take data or applications that are not aware of RMS and make them aware of RMS. So you can open up Notepad in Windows 7 and start typing a document. And if it contained credit card information, Secure Island's technology can protect it without having to change Notepad. My offer is text becomes ptext. Their offer is text is just text. And there's some benefits and there's some costs to that. But it's a very powerful offer. And architecturally, it looks a little bit like this. You can have data anywhere you want, cloud servers, files, apps, et cetera. And what they do is they infiltrate the HTTP stack. They infiltrate the file system by setting up a filter-level driver. And they watch data going through those two very important pipelines. And if data should be protected, they protect it. So if Notepad was used to create a text file with credit card information or engine part numbers for an automotive company, when it's saved to disk, that file was saved to disk in a protected form. If someone tried to save it to SkyDrive or Dropbox, a protected file would be saved to that place. So that's basically the business that they're in. And they've got reporting and archival and all of the classic suite you'd expect from such products. And they'll work with on-prem or the Azure RMS offer. Another interesting company is Secude. And what Secude does is they implement protection of SAP data. SAP is well known to be a very important repository in modern companies for financial data, business data, et cetera. And what Secude does is they basically sit in the SAP NetWeaver pipeline. And as data is exported or extracted, you know, down at the bottom, that data will be protected if important. And it'll be protected with a policy that reflects the importance of the data. So you go into the Sekude console and you'll say financial information pertaining to R&D, very strongly protected. PowerPoints related to marketing, protected to the entire company. And so you basically create the rules, and Sekude then does that encryption using our software development kit. That development kit talks to the green box, which is, again, RMS either in the cloud or on-prem. And for this particular picture, it was worth adding the red line to express that SAP data is very, very important to you, and you may choose to keep it entirely on-premise. The only thing that the RMS server is involved in is a key exchange. I call it the key dance. So the act of locking or unlocking documents does not require the document to go to Microsoft's cloud. With all of the news recently, I think it's important to say that. So if you want to keep your data and you don't want other people reading it, whether it be the US government or Microsoft employees, et cetera, the scenario here is like this. Now, the reality is no one reads the data on the cloud. The common joke is we already have enough email of our own to read. We don't need to read yours. But this, in all seriousness, Microsoft serves thousands and thousands of customers, and if one customer had a data leak or an issue with privacy, our entire business is at risk. And so we take the data protection and our compliance within our data centers very, very seriously. Still, I like to be able to promise to you all that if you wanted to keep your data out of the data center or out of the cloud, you're able to do it in this way. This is probably one of the most important aspects of the new RMS offer, the ability to share data with anyone. So I'll spend a little bit more time on this one. I'll tell you right up front what I'm going to ask of everybody in the room who deploys RMS is I'm going to ask that you use the Azure version of RMS. It's the only one that will support the 6 mobile endpoints. It's the only one that will do true business-to-business collaboration. It's the only one that can offer free sign-up services for companies that don't have RMS. And in the next few slides, you'll see why that is the case. This slide is probably the most important one, because for two companies to trust each other, you would basically set up ADFS trust between those two organizations. And that trust tends to require a lot of trust. Lawyers get involved, business contracts are signed. It takes a lot of effort. Like I said earlier, Microsoft has 7 such trusts for RMS in the last decade. What we've done here is said, and I'll just jump to the picture because it's easier to just explain with the picture, is if Sally wants to share a document with Ellen and they're in two different businesses, today this would require sharing the document unprotected. There's just no way to do it protected without setting up something like PGP. IT pros hate PGP. It's secure, but they can't see what's going across. Compliance, there's all kinds of issues if you go down a PGP or an S/MIME path with remaining compliant and remaining secure. Now, IT pro likes PGP in the sense that the data doesn't leak, but it renders all kinds of other issues problematic. So here's Sally sharing to Ellen. With RMS Online, basically each of the company's active directories are involved. So Sally sends a document to Ellen, and let's say Sally at Contoso, Ellen at Fabricam. When Ellen at Fabricam gets the document, she needs to prove that she is Ellen at Fabricam. And so she needs to log in. And the way she does it is she logs into her active directory, and RMS will get a token from Ellen's Azure Active Directory. Now, Sally needs to see that Ellen has logged in or needs to have proof of that, but that doesn't give Sally's infrastructure the right to interact with the entire Active Directory that belongs to Ellen. Only get Ellen to prove that she can log in. So there's a lot of privacy involved in this. And these two companies now can share private data between these individuals because they can leverage this infrastructure. But each company only had to trust Azure Active Directory. And then the brokerage works flawlessly. So now if Sally chooses to share with Fred, Nancy, Raphael, Antonio, you name it, Sally automatically gets to do that with one ADFS federated trust to the cloud. So that's basically the model for trust that I was going to describe here. So the second bullet basically calls out that Azure Active Directory with the Azure Rights Management Services, the combination of those two act as this trust broker to enable you to securely collaborate with documents. We have the ability to share with individuals as well, and I'll show that on the next slide here. If I chose to share with all of you, yeah, question? I got to come by because I have the fan here. It's really noisy. Okay. Okay. So the question is, if you have a customer that today doesn't expose much to the web, how do they do this sharing? How do they enable that higher security so that they don't have an exposure to, say, a brute force attack? There are a couple of things that are involved. One is your AD and your Azure AD could be selectively filtered. So when you directory, you could choose not to synchronize, and then only the accounts that live in AAD would work, and I'll describe the self-sign-up in a minute. The passwords don't need to be the same, so you could choose to have completely different accounts for those identities. But in the case where you do directory sync AAD to AAD, you could say, I'm only going to directory sync marketing people. So that's part one. So you reduce scope or exposure there. Part two is Microsoft recently acquired a company called PhoneFactor, where you can actually do two-factor auth for all of these cloud operations if you wanted to. And then three, Microsoft's own data center is doing a lot, an increasingly large amount of pattern analysis on account usage and behaviors to help prevent fraudulent use of accounts. This is the core of our business. We will be spending a lot of energy ensuring that customers feel comfortable doing this. So that's part one. Part two, today most of these companies that are in a position or in a need to do collaboration have to put servers in their DMZ. And so they have the same exposure with ADFS. It's not new. It's just done on a different, in a different way and a different scale. And as I said earlier, if we've got 10,000 companies that are all relying on the same infrastructure, you could be sure that we're taking it very, very seriously. Now, if I were to send an email to all of you and that email contained a protected document, and my intent was that you all be able to read it, but only the people in this room, this is something that we're doing. And this is the flow that will be the golden scenario, if you wish, for RMS in the coming months. I can go to any document I want, right-click, and say protect in place. So that will protect the document right on my hard drive. And then I could do what I want with that document. Or I can go to that document in Explorer and say right-click, share protected. I can also go into Word, Excel, PowerPoint, 2007, 2010, 2013, any one of those, and hit a new button that we're putting in the toolbar called share protected. And when you hit share protected on that button, it will basically take, say, the PowerPoint or the Word document, and it'll pop up a dialogue that says, who do you want to share this to? And then, what rights do you want? And you get to pick the rights that you'd like to share. You could say, viewer only. You could say reviewer. You could say author. You could say co-owner. Basically, you have a slider. And the control that the other person has is based on that slider. The end of the slider is all rights. So you could actually say, oh, I'm willing to give the person all rights, except they must prove that they are that person. So if you're sharing a document with Alice, Alice must log in to prove that she's allowed to open this document. And what full rights can do is protect the document so that it works on any platform. So I can take a Word document, rights protect it. When in full rights mode, it will become word.doc.pfile. So then you can use your iPad and open up the Word document using Apple's Pages application or Numbers application for that document. You could use Keynote to read an RMS-protected PDF, PPTX, with that all rights mode. Now, Apple doesn't know how to enforce RMS, and so you wouldn't be able to say read-only for that user. So if you're depending on who you're sending to, you may need to use a different setting on the scale, but that's basically what you do. Who do you want to share it to? What rights do you want? And then you say share. Once that happens, an email comes up and it says, Dan would like to share with you, everybody in this room, the following secure document. Please sign in or sign up. And if you've not used RMS before, you'll basically be invited to sign up and it will look like this. This is obviously a little ugly because I didn't want to show the actual pretty one that we're working on. But you basically get something that looks like this. Please give me your email name and prove that you're not a robot. So you type in your CAPTCHA. Then I say, okay, Tejas@dogfoodrms.com. Give me your first name, your last name, a password you'd like to use, and what country you're in. Once you've done that, you now have free RMS. So if Paolo in the room did this, or Tejas in the room did this, Tejas has Tejas@contoso.com. That email is now RMS enabled, even if the IT pro didn't do RMS in their company yet. We just give it to them. At that point, they can install on the five different clients, Windows or Mac computers, Windows Mobile, Apple iOS Mobile, and Android. They can install any one of the clients, and they can go find out more about applications that have been instrumented in RMS. If you're an application writer, you can tell us about your application, and you're good to go. That's pretty much it. You just got RMS for free. Any questions on this before I jump to a slightly different topic? Yeah. Yeah, so I believe I heard the question as, if I pick anything other than the United States, is the data kept regionally? Oh, yes. So the only reason for the United States drop down, in this case, I should have shown Europe here, but we basically have data centers in 6, soon to be 7, 8, 9 regions worldwide. So, for example, in Europe, it's Amsterdam and Ireland. In the United States, it's Chicago and Austin. We have in Hong Kong, Singapore for APAC region. So those data centers are basically where the data locality resides. So if a country here, say Carrefour, dan@carrefour.com, I would say Europe, the quote company that's created for RMS, dan@carrefour.com, is created in Europe. And that data is not replicated to the United States or to Asia. So it's very regional. And then you can share across boundaries. There's no limitations with sharing. Does that cover the question? Okay. I apologize. There's a duct here for the fan, and the noise is very loud. But catch me afterwards, and I can go through it. So in terms of implementing RMS, there's really three types of organizations in my experience now. You're either cloud-ready, wanting to jump in quickly for either economic reasons. Sometimes, honestly, it's competency. Some companies come to us and say, you know what, we've had a hard time running it. It's just been complicated. We've had a security breach of recent. I just want to get out of that business, and I want to move to the cloud. You help me. I trust you more than I trust me. So cloud ready. Cloud hesitant. These are people that, digging heels in the ground a little bit, saying, the cloud scares me. I'm very, very worried. And in the middle is, you know what, I'm willing to listen to the cloud story. I have some concerns. Tell me more. Let's see where you're at. So companies are generally in all three. We have solutions for all three. In terms of purchasing this, the general purchase is You can buy Office 365 if you're cloud ready, and RMS is included in the E3 and E4 offers, Enterprise 3 and Enterprise 4 offers. You could purchase E1 or K1, which are different, smaller, less expensive offers for Office 365, and use RMS as an add-on. Starting in September on the price list, you will be able to purchase RMS online and purchase nothing from Office 365. So you could use it with on-prem offers, and I'll describe that in a moment. And the current price for the offer is $2 per user per month. We run the servers, the product is obviously included. And this price is about the same price as someone buying RMS on-premise today, except that you have to run it and do everything else. So I think the price is very approachable, and obviously this is quantity of one. If you purchase as part of an enterprise agreement, the price drops down, and that's part of the sales team effort. As I said earlier, Tim Davis will be talking about that. The talk's actually tomorrow. I made a mistake here. And Tim will go through all of the PowerShell and configuration required to do this. In terms of the way we see the architecture for the three different types, starting from my side of the screen here, Azure RMS, you basically can use on-prem RMS or cloud RMS. We're saying that because of the functionality that we're able to offer by using the cloud as an auth broker and by having all the mobile phones not have to go in through reverse proxies or VPNs, we're actually advocating strongly that everyone use Azure AD RMS, top to bottom. There are some companies that still need to use AD RMS. If you have it, continue using it. We will support the overlap, if you wish, the coexistence of the two. But we're asking that new companies use the cloud RMS. Now, super important to understand from this slide is you don't need to use anything else in the cloud if you don't want to. You could basically keep all your documents on-premise. You can keep all your Exchange email on-premise, SharePoint on-premise. You could share documents privately with the people you want to share documents with. You don't have to go to the cloud if there are concerns. But you have the ability, as you can see as we go up in this diagram here, to start putting email boxes in the cloud. You might say, oh, I'm going to have all of my factory floor workers have online mailboxes, and I'll keep my executives on-premise. You might choose to do the opposite. That's all up to you. There's a continuous offer here from bottom to top to enable you to solve the problems. In terms of timelines, these are the sort of calendar-looking view. So Office 365 with Azure RMS is already there. It's one button to turn on. Literally, click. You have to confirm. So I guess it's two buttons. And once you say, yes, I'm sure, RMS turns on, and you've got RMS in your organization if you're on Office 365. As we start going down here towards the bottom, there's this feature called the connector. And the RMS, the Azure RMS connector, is a pretty cool technology. Basically, it's a VM role or a server you deploy in your company, and it lies about being an RMS server. It says, hey, I'm an RMS on-prem server. So when Exchange and SharePoint and FCI and DAC and work folders now look for an RMS server, we just go, yeah, we're here. But all the traffic is sent to the Azure RMS server as a relay. And so with two machines for your entire organization, you could basically get RMS on-prem by using the cloud relay. Your desktop applications and your mobile phones all go straight to the cloud, but your server infrastructure would be tricked, if you wish, into using the cloud offer. We've implemented a very secure, an extremely secure infrastructure for key management, and I'll dive into that in a minute. But just while I'm on this slide here, it's called BYOK, Bring Your Own Key. We go through this elaborate HSM configuration and processing. Again, I'll talk about that in a moment. But the idea here is that you're in control of that infrastructure from your on-prem standpoint using the cloud. As you start moving up between the full cloud offer and the base offer, you can start using other services in the cloud. You have that coexistence. Like I said, you might have a dozen people or 100 people or 10,000 people that have Exchange Online and SharePoint Online sites, and that's okay. RMS is available in all those cases. Exchange obviously does RMS for email protection, and SharePoint has this concept called the secure library. So you can create a SharePoint, and then you turn on the secure library feature, and what that means is any document that's taken out of that SharePoint, it's protected to either a security group or to that user alone. And then the user brings back the document, RMS is taken off, and someone else can take it out. So it's basically certified mail or a certified document transport. But that document then is A, secure, but almost more importantly, by turning on RMS for individuals, you force them to bring it back to SharePoint. Because they can't modify the document and then share with someone else on the side. They have to check it in, and then someone else goes and gets a checkout copy. So the beauty is it drives centralization for document management and storage. Okay, keys. So playing a little bit with words here. Key control is quite key. It's very central to designing a proper system. I have sort of three parts of the story here. The first part is I actually don't want your key. It's all risk, no fun for me. But for me to run my service, I need the key. Why? Because you expect me, one, to enable collaboration between individuals, between organizations, and so I have to be that broker. Two, you want Exchange, SharePoint, and other applications to reason over data. So as documents are shared between people and they go through Exchange or they go through SharePoint, you want Exchange and SharePoint to be able to look at that data and enforce your GRC type behaviors. So those two aspects of it require that we cache your key. I don't want to leak your key. So what we've done is we've come up with an infrastructure with Talos, and I'll talk about Talos in a moment, worldwide leader in key security. In short, if you're worried about Talos for your keys, you have far bigger problems because they run air traffic control, they run train station, they run reservations, they have 19 of the 20 largest banks in the world. You will personally lose all your money before your RMS keys leaked is sort of the way that I internalize this. So good partner for us. But Talos, basically, we've put Talos HSMs in all of our data centers worldwide. We ask that you generate a key in your Talos HSM. You could choose not to use one, but we actually want you to have one. You can get a cheap one for around, I think it's 1,000 euros. And then you would have a super secure store for your key. And then you would basically take your key and cache it in our HSM. When it's in our HSM, I cannot remove it. Even if I have all my operators, I cannot take your key out. I cannot make use of any document unprotection action without the HSM doing the operation. And that operation, to the second point, is logged. So everything that the HSM does with your key is logged. And customers said, well, what? It doesn't serve me much use if the log, I only get to look at it 30 days later, or if I only get to look at it at request. So what we've done is we said, you as a customer can go buy Azure Blob Storage. You give me, my service, the symmetric key to write to your storage. And in near real time, we will write. Every 5 minutes, we drop a file with every action your HSM did into that storage. So you can basically hire some of the people that are here. You know, Splunk is an example, AvePoint. I think Brightline was another company that does reporting. We will work with them to consume your logs. And they'll just sit on your logs and offer all kinds of interesting information. Some could be in real time. Hey, Dan looks like he's doing something different than normal. Some of it could be really cool, like let's say next year I decide I want to go work for some other company. My human resources department can say, hey, could you go look at Dan's activity for the last year and tell me if he's looking at data that came from different departments within the company? And then all of a sudden, you might find out that Dan, about 5 months ago, spent a bunch of time looking at Xbox documentation and specifications, and Dan conveniently has joined a company that is a gaming company. Now Microsoft would have the ability to say, well, we're not going to let Dan go to such and such gaming company because he did effectively industrial espionage before he left. And so forensics type evidence is very, very powerful. So that's the second one, real-time logging. The third one is this concept of being able to get your key into our device. I won't dive into this. I have like a 90-minute talk that goes through crazy detail here. But I have insane cryptographers whose job it is figuring out how one key can leave one HSM, get into the other HSM, such that nobody can ever have access to that key. We've actually figured out a way to do it without people having to fly over to see us. And it's very secure with the Talos low-level APIs and fast APIs. And finally, for those of you who are concerned about being able to sort of pull the key or yank the key, we've created this concept called key rejuvenation, where when you create the key that we can use, you create it in a way that I can only use it for 4 hours at a time. And you send me the key with the PowerShell script every 2 hours, sort of like a certificate renewal lifecycle. And basically, when you decide that you're not sure if you want to trust me, given news, whatever happens, let's say there was a breach in your security in your company, you go, oh my God, I've got a problem. You pull the net cable out of the machine that is doing the key rejuvenation in your company, and 4 hours later, I die. Basically, all the documents that were RMS protected cannot be unlocked until you plug that cable back in and we get keys back in our HSMs in a cache state. So this puts the power in your hand, because if ever there was an issue that concerns you, if you had to log into our website and for some reason you couldn't get into the website to kill the key, you basically have an ability to say that we have a fail-safe mechanism. You just pull the plug, 4 hours later, you're guaranteed it will stop working. It's a keep-alive type model. Question? Okay. 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 So thank you. So there was some comment. There was a question here about when using the connector, does the content actually go to the cloud or is it just the key dance? So at the beginning, I tried to put emphasis on this. If you're a cloud hesitant company and you keep all your documents on premise, but you use Azure RMS, the way RMS works in a nutshell is you have a document. The document gets wrapped with RMS. And the way the wrapping works is we take a symmetric key encryption of the document, and the symmetric key is put in the document. So think of WinZip, where the key is in a special part of the document. That symmetric key was wrapped in an RSA 2048-bit key to your parent tenant key. So when that document is protected, everything to unlock the document is actually in the document. But the way RMS works is we basically say, at the time you go to unlock a document, we take that policy license and we just bring it to the server. And we say, this is the policy license for this document. Dan is trying to use it. Is Dan permitted to use this? And under what conditions? I have to prove who I am to the server, so I prove that I'm Dan at Microsoft.com. Once I've done that, then the RMS server looks at the policy license and says, Dan is only allowed read-only access. And the application, Word or Excel, PowerPoint, Foxit, will then enforce those rights. But the data never went to the cloud. The only thing that went to the cloud was the usage policy for the document. Thank you. The last part, I guess I covered all of these. This is Talos. For those of you who are not familiar with HSMs, I kind of explain this like a little Roadrunner coyote kind of thing. Think of the coyote think of Roadrunner as building a device, and the device is basically a crypto processor that is wrapped in explosives and dipped in epoxy. And if Wile E. Coyote tries to get into the HSM, it blows up. And when it blows up, any state in the crypto processor is deleted. A common misunderstanding about HSMs is that they save all of the keys in it, and it's this giant big machine that has tons and tons of keys in it. That's actually not true. the keys are protected to an HSM infrastructure key, and they can float around outside of the HSM because only the HSM can decrypt them. And so when each of you use RMS, you are given a tenant key that you give us a tenant key that only works in the HSM, and those keys could be taken out of the HSM and stored on disk. It doesn't matter. They're useless to anyone because they're only unlockable by the HSM. And once they're introduced into the HSM in memory, not persisted, but in memory, the HSM unlocks them and starts using the key for your business. But if you pull the plug out of the HSM, all of that dies, and you have to reload the key in the HSM. Okay, so real quick, we talked about collaboration. This is the absolute minimum that you need to do, and I think this is of overwhelming value for a modern company. You're an entirely on-prem company. You're scared of the cloud. Let's just start with the min bar. So you've got users, admins, AD, Exchange, SharePoint, HSMs, Office Apps, Exchange, ActiveSync enabled devices, Android, Windows Phone, iOS, and some applications like Word, Excel, PowerPoint, PDF Viewer, et cetera. We ask that you use an HSM with RMS, you use RMS in Azure, and notice the color of the top box. It's half black, half gray. Half blue, half gray, because it represents that hardened HSM offer. Your key is cached in that offer. It's within the HSM. We can now use it to perform actions by leveraging your AD, synchronized to AAD, and then we do our business. This is the minimum footprint. Again, in this footprint, I'd like to emphasize that I never, ever see your documents. The only thing I do for you is make sure that whomever else looks at the docs has to log in to prove who they are to me, and then I unlock the document, but I never saw the document. I give the keys down to the endpoint, so it unlocks the document. And it's, again, super important. And if there's any questions about this or any doubts, find me after or come to our kiosk. We have a group of people who are experts on this and walk you through it. And then once you do that, a whole bunch of new applications and mobile devices can all use that RMS online offer. At this point, I've covered a lot of stuff. You have a lot of decisions to make. The easy one is whether sharing securely across businesses is important or not. I think this is a breakthrough in terms of recent innovations and the ability to share data with people. In terms of how you implement it, it's a little bit more complicated in that you have more options. You could use it in Office 365. If your company is headed to Office 365, easiest way to get this done, it's two clicks. You're on. That's it. Seriously, you can go, as soon as you leave here, you could go get yourself an E3 trial account, turn it on, and you can send me rights-protected information. And we could just play around, and it works. Business-to-business collaboration with Office 365 just works today. The hybrid connector, or the Azure RMS connector, is the quickest way to get to information protection offerings. You have an on-premise footprint today. You use Exchange. You use SharePoint. You could basically get this connector, which will be in preview end of July, release probably early October, late September. You'll put the connector on two VMs within your company, and instantly you can now do the same sharing as Office 365 to Office 365 people could. So you can start playing with the top one, and then in a month from now, you'll be able to deploy the second one for preview. And then that's it. You're basically done. One moment. And then you don't need to do all the complicated bring your own key stuff. We can generate a key for you. Again, we're highly secure. We use HSMs. We're very careful about the whole key ceremony and behaviors. But that's the first two. If you're more paranoid, that's okay. We respect that. We are pretty paranoid ourselves. You could do the BYOK, the bring your own key dance, and we will use the key that you provide to us. There's some small trade-offs. If you bring your own key, we don't have a backup of your key. you keep a backup of your key. And so we recommend you use a Talos device on-premise. If we generate your key, we have backups. We could restore. We could do all that work for you. But if you're paranoid, you might not like that. So you basically have that. Logging will work. We're working with partners to do logging analysis, but you can download the logs and put them in SQL and do all your things yourself. And key rejuvenation as well. That'll come a little bit later. I had a question in the back first. Yeah. I need to come see you, so. Yes. Okay, great. So when we talked about the connector configuration, the question is, you know, a little bit more detail about how this works. AD to AAD is a directory sync, or dir sync is the term you might hear, operation. And the way you configure your AD to use Azure Active Directory, you turn on directory synchronization, you could choose to filter. You could choose to do very elaborate configuration using some of the FIM technologies, and there are folks here that are having talks on that. Joan O'Loke is one of the speakers, I believe, on that talk. And then you have two choices. One choice is you can do ADFS federation to Azure Active Directory, and that's a live authentication channel, so you get to see all the auths in real time. The other option, which is far simpler, is to have AD synchronize passwords as well to Azure Active Directory. And it's obviously done in a very secure manner. But then Azure Active Directory can do logins for you without requiring that you come back into ADFS. So both options. We find the password sync to be quite popular as a way of evaluating, because it's very quick to get going. And B, for companies that just don't want the complexity of running an ADFS server group in their environment, it's an also great way. It was put into production just recently, and overwhelming acceptance. A lot of people are doing it very, very quickly. So it's worth following up on another conversation. There was a question here up front. July 18 is when I've asked my team to deliver the Azure RMS service that's already running with the connector, with the six SDKs. Some of them will be in beta, most will be released, and with the five applications. Some will be in alpha, some will be beta, some will be released. And that's all July, next month. And bring your own key. The bring your own key and logging will be available from the start in July and September in production. Key rejuvenation will come in September is when we expect to do the preview of that, and very soon after I'll be running. It's not that complicated once you know what you're doing. It's just a matter of vetting it out to make sure that everything works very well. So we'll start bringing in people quietly and in small preview numbers very, very shortly. And then finally, if you're not all that impressed or you don't need the business-to-business collaboration in a very serious way, and you just say, look, I'm sorry, I just have to use RMS on-prem, you don't get mobile device support other than through Exchange Active Sync, which is still quite good. But for example, you won't be able to read protected documents on an iPhone. Because Apple does not implement Exchange Active Sync RMS. Android does it, and you can get mail clients that are enabled to do it. But you could still do generic protection. So you could still get all the benefits of protecting any file type and getting RMS-protected PDF on-premise. So small limitation there if you don't use RMS on-prem. Finally, in terms of this being overwhelming, There are a couple things. One, in the not-too-distant future, maybe a month from now, we will be doing a fairly aggressive deployment kit release. You could talk to your sales partner now to learn more about this. Microsoft Consulting Services understand RMS and understand the complexity of your larger org and are willing to work with you. But we have Synergy Advisors, Christian and Rafael here in the front from Spain. They're experts at RMS. They basically travel the world doing RMS deployments for us, with us. And so if you're looking at doing something like this very quickly and somewhat cost-effectively, these gentlemen have people around the world that basically help us with our RMS deployments. And if all else fails, that alias, askipteam@microsoft.com, hits my desk, hits Tim's, hits most of the people who build the RMS product, give us feedback, yell at us, ask for help. That's what we do. We take this very seriously. That's it. Thank you very much. I've got a red light here, and I've got someone dancing in the back going, "You're done." Thank you so much.